This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Hello. In the traditional motion picture story, the villains are usually defeated. The ending is a happy one. I can make no such promise for the picture you're about to watch. The story isn't over. You and the audience are part of the conflict.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
9-3-0-2-8.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
That would authorize to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
This government, Republicans and Democrats, were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have this far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Gleason and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American I'm talking about? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. Welcome aboard. A lot of things going on today. Another fast-moving news day, as we always have here on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, agenda21radio.news. That's agenda21radio.news. And also, newcaliforniastate.com. And please visit our website. If you're going to go to the second constitutional convention for New California, it's going to be a big, big day, and well, evening and day, event down in Irvine, California. You can go to the website and go to events and click on the Constitutional Convention number 2. You'll see that icon there to click onto to get your tickets. Okay, we have been following a number of events naturally here on Agenda 21 Radio, not only nationally but also in California, just realizing that Jenny Mora of Tracy, California, was found dead in Washington, D.C. She was helping citizen journalist George Webb, to find out about the deep state and especially sex trafficking. Apparently, she was she had a stroke at a very young age, following a beat down and broken back and things like that. Just one of the things that happens in Washington, D.C. Anyway, so we're very sad to hear that. She was from Tracy, California. Also, the Seth Rich thing we talked about with the incident with Seth Rich with Scott Adams and the Scott Adams Show in the first hour. Right now with us, though, is Chris Street of Agenda 21 Radio and also Breitbart. Chris writes for Breitbart. Numerous stories coming out every single day. And one of the big stories that's been going on, and Chris has been pounding Elon Musk And, you know, I like Elon Musk, SpaceX. Not too sure about the Tesla motor car, which we're going to talk about here in a second. But we have Chris with us. And Chris, Elon, is he turning around the whole Tesla thing or what?
Paul, there's a saying that eventually even the blind bird finds the worm.
I never heard that one, but...
But Elon Musk has managed to be, Tesla's been there for 14 years, lost money every year, just gobs and gobs of money, and people throwing more money at it. And amazingly, he has kept in the game. And you know, Silicon Valley's most famous saying is break things and move fast. Well, Elon Musk has been breaking things and moving fast. And quite frankly, and this is going to come surprisingly from me, I think he's actually created a real commercial vehicle in the Model 3. This is supposed to be the $35,000, Tesla little sedan. Sedans aren't exactly what people want. They want SUVs. But this little guy, he managed to design in a cheaper manufacturing process and probably has revolutionized the auto industry, just like he's revolutionized the missile launch industry with SpaceX, and just like he's about done in trains with Hyperloop. So, the first Model 3 was a complete disaster. It was sort of a hand-built, off-the-shelf, partsy kind of thing. It was an electric car. It did some of the things it was supposed to do, but it really wasn't a commercial vehicle. The third-year iteration of the Model 3 is a very well-made, the equivalent of what I call an iPhone, in the way its circuit boards and electric structures are packaged. So this thing has about 35% less parts now. It goes together like a jigsaw puzzle. It's easy to manufacture, and it probably has a profitable margin. And, Elon Musk is unwilling to share that profitability with the shareholders. He's going to take the company private.
Well, that's pretty amazing after all these years of shareholders contributing to Mr. Musk, and all of a sudden, shazam, he's going private. So this, and listen, ladies and gentlemen, for Chris Street to come out and have these kind of props for Elon Musk, you've been ragging on him for 14 years, I think, haven't you?
That's exactly right. In July 20th, with the stock crashing, everybody giving up on him, blah, 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 I wrote an article that said from the sources that I use, one of them was called Monroe and Associates, that actually tears down automobiles for other automobile manufacturers to find out how the parts go together, to find out, the fit and finish, to understand what their costs are in a very competitive industry. And the last teardown Monroe did on a new Model 3 was stunningly better than the one he had done 9 months before on two of them.
Learning from his mistakes, basically.
Well, I've got to say that, a man who can make mistakes with billions of dollars and not suffer a foul ball, maybe that's a good entrepreneur's opportunity. Usually is a fool and his money are quickly separated, but in this case, Elon Musk, I have had nothing but great things to say about him on SpaceX, great things to say about him on Hyperloop, which, by the way, is nothing more than sort of a fancy kind of pneumatic tubes that everybody used to have in their company, to send messages from floor to floor. We're not talking about rocket science here. And we're talking about vacuum tubes. But both of those have been very creative. And compared to the mess that's, the high-speed rail and such, have been really brilliant efforts. And then there was Tesla. And Tesla was sort of like, and there was Tesla. And Tesla lost money on every car they ever made. It had terrible warranty problems. It had terrible issues the way it drove. Its autopilot killed people. And now he's dialed it in. So, give me $1 trillion and a blind bird will find the worm.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, which I find amazing, and I want to say that the Train to Nowhere is, 11 years old yesterday? California trained in nowhere.
Should we all sing?
Yeah, God.
Do we get funny hats? Because you've got to be wearing a funny hat if you're for the high-speed rail.
Well, but anyway, and you know, and by the way, just cruise around Fresno, California, and see all the infrastructure that's been built up for bridges and everything else that probably will be torn down at some point in time, I suspect. But you know, one of the things that was really positive, I mean, really explosive about Elon Musk, of course, is SpaceX. And he's really been carrying the load for that. Chris, I'm just amazed because I've been watching, you know, the rockets go up since we were kids, you know, with the black and white TVs in the 60s and watching Cape Canaveral and rockets explode on the launch pad and things like that. But, you know, I had never seen the launch vehicles actually re-enter and land, which I just find absolutely stunning that he's able to do that. And also, not only that, but he can land them on ships at sea.
Well, that's right, Paul. He's able to land them on barges. You know, people talk about, well, you know, other people have done it with smaller rockets. It doesn't work that way, ladies and gentlemen. Physics is exponential. The more weight and size, the much more difficult the problem is to address. And SpaceX has special patents and issues with this idea of reusable booster rockets. Now, a booster rocket normally costs about $60 million retail. And, of course, if you're going to have some tricks done to it and some other things, you can knock the price up. You know, Mr. Musk came along and said that I can use this rocket again. And everybody snickered and laughed. Yeah, you're going to fire a candle like that, and you're going to have it reusable, sort of like, you know, an automobile. And he went out and he did it. And when he did it, he cut the cost launch per booster from $60 million to about $33 million. Now, $27 million in cash, even if you're the federal government, is a lot of money when you're pushing up a lot of rockets.
Yeah. I mean, it's just stunning to see that sort of thing. In fact, I spent about a half of a day retrieving all the YouTubes I could of all the visuals of his attempts to land. And, of course, a lot of them crashed and blew up on the barges at sea and stuff like that. But when he did his latest venture by putting the car up there, the Tesla, in outer space, and he brought down those rocket launchers, they both came down simultaneously at the same exact time. It was just absolutely stunning to see that whole performance. So he is really, I guess, is the space part of what he's doing profitable to him?
Well, I'm sure it is extremely profitable to either him or whoever is the controlling shareholders there. It's a private company. We really don't know much about it. It's believed he owns about 30-some percent of it. But, you know, this guy has changed the game. You know, Mr. North Korea, you know, the only fat man in North Korea, because there is only one. Everybody else gets to eat bark, and one guy obviously eats well. Dear leader had a nuclear weapon. He got the engines from Ukraine, our Ukraine, that we formed a revolution for, and pretty much could put three together, stacked on top of each other, and hit New York City or Washington, D.C. Now, I know for liberals, you know, they don't really care what happens in the, you know, center of California, because after all, that's flyover country. But if you can hit Los Angeles, D.C., and New York, you know, that's their people. And, of course, that caused a real big issue with the left. But the nice part about entrepreneurship and creativity is the cost of Mr. Musk's SpaceX rockets and the reusability of it are so inexpensive that we've already put up what are called battle stars. These are they're supposed to be looks kind of like the shuttle called the XB 37. They look sort of like a shuttle, except they're like the old C-130 gunships that the doors come down on the side and there's laser cannons there. And so if you shoot a rocket up, we can swat it before it can get to its trajectory and start moving towards the U.S. That is a major disruptive force. And when President Trump talks about Space Force. We've got a 10 to 15 year lead on everybody, and within 2 years, we will have a halo of small rockets that are able to, you know, push these vehicles up and cover the sky, and we will have no enemies.
Well, you know, and of course, the Chinese come into play here, don't they, somehow?
Well, the Chinese have an interesting concept. I can't beat you in aircraft carriers, so I will swarm you with a bunch of bees. They have small drones that they are going to launch and hypersonic missiles that they would launch, a swarm sort of like the penguins do when they try to get past the big leopard seal. They all fly at them at the same time to confuse them.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was they could shoot off enough rockets that and missiles that you couldn't really defend from it. But with the halo of a Space Force, you'll be able to laser them down from the sky. This is a dramatic disruption technology. This is exactly what Ronald Reagan said he would do. And clearly America is within 18 months of being operational on a halo system that nobody else can compete with.
Well, that brings up a couple of other things, and I want to step back for a second because you mentioned Ukraine. And there's an article that we put up on Agenda 21 Radio a couple of days ago, nightmare photo of Mueller hanging with Ukrainian president. He's prosecuting Manafort over surfaces. And, of course, this is this infamous picture now of the pro-Russian president Viktor Yanukovych. He and Mueller shaking hands in 2013, Robert Mueller, who's investigating Manafort. Manafort was working with Yanukovych at that time, but there were a lot of other things going on because you mentioned that it was the United States who overthrew Yanukovych with John Brennan's help in 2013 and 2014.
Well, that's right. You know, Barack Obama had this university attitude that, you know, you would free people and they would somehow love democracy. You know, or at least they would love him, egotistically. And so he blew up the Middle East and had fun doing it and thought he could basically control them because he was so beautiful. And, you know, they really didn't think he was very beautiful. They thought, you know, they wanted their own tribal structure back. And you've pretty much taken the cork out of the bottle. When you get to Ukraine is the, you know, the original birthplace of the Russian nation. You know, the Rus, as they say, was created a revolution to overthrow and, you know, align with the West. That is a really disruptive concept to the Russians, given that the border of Ukraine is about 300 miles to downtown Moscow over flat land.
Yeah, and one of the things that you've brought out very well is that during World War II, there was a battle out right outside that little border between Russia and Ukraine called Kursk, in which well over 3 million Russians died within just a few days trying to stop the Nazis.
Well, that's right. The Nazis lost about 165,000 dead and about 400,000 dead or wounded, and it broke Germany in World War II. Now, the Russians lost at least 1.7 million and had at least 3 million casualties and probably just had close to 3 million dead because, you know, casualties in Russia, we just get some more.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, the significance, though, of this overthrow was that ultimately they were able to start sending arms and shipments of rocket motors to North Korea.
Ukraine. Well, that's a big controversy as to how they got there. But it seemed to happen during our time.
And, well, yeah. It just so happened that Rocket Boy had some very, very good intercontinental ballistic missiles all of a sudden. And I'm sure people that are literally eating dirt can't manufacture those rocket motors.
Well, he's got a level of technology that he can make an application. You give him this very sophisticated, and the best part about the Russians' equipment is it's not always top tech. But it is absolutely bulletproof stuff. The things they make is very regicized, which means it can take any kind of environment and, you know, keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the issue, is that You know, you got a regicized engine that you could stack on top of each other, and pretty soon you have a vehicle that can do 6,000-8,000 miles.
Well, of course, what is the status of that stuff now, given Trump's situation?
I think the difference between, you know, it's great to be the only fat man in North Korea. It's not great to be the dead fat man in Korea. Clearly, Trump was going to take the guy out, and he decided maybe Plan B was a good idea. The one thing about Trump is he doesn't just bluff and negotiate; he'll actually follow through. And that's a problem if you're a nation that operates as a terrorist state. You know, you've got to be able to have people blink. If they don't blink, you're in trouble.
Right. Donald Trump does not blink. His relationship with Putin, a lot of people have been talking smack, I guess. A lot of people have been kind of laughing it off. What is your opinion about his relationship with Putin at this time?
Well, I think it'd be great if America could get along with Russia. I mean, is it anybody doubt that getting Russia involved in Syria has drastically reduced radical Islam terrorism? That has drastically changed, you know, the chessboard in the Middle East to where if you're an ISIS member, you may be a former ISIS member quickly. So, you know, I would like to get along with the Russians. I think if I was Russia and you took Ukraine and opened up the breadbasket of Russia to an invasion by NATO, I would be pretty damn concerned that you'd actually follow through, especially if your name was Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think America should be in league with Russia. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but you know the alternative is you got to deal with China. So you either got to either Russia and China are allies, or you isolate China by peeling off Russia. If you don't, those two together can be pretty damn competitive.
Now, the situation, and I'm going to switch gears here and go to China because that's one of your specialties. In fact, you were in the movie Death by China, featured as a presenter there. That's Peter Navarro, who happens to be the trade czar working alongside the president. The president's trade czar, trade commissioner, whatever he's called. Or whatever his title is, and you talk to Mr. Navarro quite often. What is your sense of what's going on in China right now? This is the sort of Chinese update. It's almost something that we need to get every week now, because they've got a lot of strains that's now coming to the surface, which you predicted accurately on this radio show and Breitbart months ago. The strains of the economy are starting to show itself within China. And one of the reasons why the tariffs don't seem to be too much of a bad thing for the United States plays into that.
Well, the United States has a very small percentage of the nation that's in the export business. But, you know, outsourcing labor, there's two ways to do it. One is that you actually send it to another country. And the other is you just open up your immigration and you wipe out, you know, American job competitiveness and break wages. Both work to break wages, but when it comes to China, it's really a long ways away, and you know they've moved up from being willing to work for just two bowls of rice a day up from one. So you have the situation where there's inflation in China. China has grown spectacularly fast, the old-fashioned way, as they say, by leveraging up its debt, and China now has debt of around three times its gross domestic product. That is stunning by any measure, and one advantage of being communist is you can kill people and reduce the amount of protests they can make. But all of these games eventually end up in tears, and that's where China is. You're one major banking crisis away from tears.
What? How do you view China's threat to the United States right now?
I actually lectured the Chinese. There's sort of two Chinese. There's the wonderful, happy Chinese, you know, that really like life. And then there's the serious damn Chinese that have all of the attributes.
Yep. Hey, Chris, hang on. We're coming up to the music. We'll be right back. You're listening to Agenda 21. I'm so captivated. We're going to come back and talk about China with Chris Street. Stay with us. You're listening to Agenda 21 Radio.
He's undoing the UN, one community at a time. It's Paul Preston.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-600-5860. That's 800-600-5860. 800-600-5860.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-711-5095 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-711-5095. Again, that's 800-711-5095.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715 and use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
And we're back here on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, agenda21radio.news. We're with Chris Street, and we're talking about China right now. Good China, bad China, the economy and what's going on in China and how it's going to influence us. And then I want to get into New California, and things are progressing as Chris Street has predicted, I might add. So, Chris, back to the China question.
Well, I think, once again, we're talking about the Chinese. As I said, there's this happy-go-lucky, wonderful, friendly, you know, good-natured Japanese people. I'm sorry, Chinese people at work and at the daytime. And then there's that other side of the Chinese, which are pretty ruthless and have a lot of history of having plenty of enemies and feel that they're always constantly under attack. So that sort of cauldron of mixture, you know, it has a lot of problems when it comes to, you know, China and the world. China was 50% of the GDP of the world for 4,000 years. All of the money that you talk about in the Renaissance and all that, it all came from the trade with China on the Silk Road. So that was the greatest wealth creator in history, was the Silk Road between the East and the West. That's really what money was about. You didn't need money when you sort of just traded chickens for labor or something like that, food for labor. But when you started having trade, you started moving things over long distances, that's where real wealth was created. You know, China lost its way about 250 years ago, and once it lost its way, it was carved up by lots of big countries with big appetites. When they got it back, they got it back by a ruthless ruler, Mao Zedong, who killed off probably 10% of the population and made it clear to everybody else that anything you do wrong, I will take your hands and then your head. So now you've moved up to where they're supposed to be, you know, a participant in modern society. The way they got there was cutting people's hands and heads off. They took a reprieve, to do business, but there's still that element of people in the Communist Party that cut off hands and heads.
Well, but going forward, their economy is tanking from what we're hearing. How's that playing on the world?
That is sort of like their economy is tanking. Their economy is in trouble. The problem with China is, does it really have an economy or does it have an employment situation? China's game is to get everybody employed and make them happy so that they can use the size and the scope of their nation to achieve their agenda. You know, you're now having people laid off of coal mines and steel plants because they're no way competitive with the United States having fracking and really cheap energy input, which for steel is 33% of the cost of making steel and about 40% for aluminum. So you have these big labor problems in China. You're trying to keep it all together by cheap money and, pumping up the lending situation. But eventually they sort of, you go, and then you fall straight off a cliff. One day it's going to happen. Is it going to be tomorrow? I don't know.
I guess the question are they too big to fail at this point in time? I guess it's one of the questions that people might want to know.
The United States in 2008 was approaching fail point. What Barack Obama did by raising taxes in a severe recession gave the same response when Herbert Hoover raised taxes in a severe recession. You got a near depression. Now, the United States only climbed, should have collapsed. You should have had money collapse, should have had a currency collapse and all that. But some jughead wildcatters out there in places like South Dakota and Pennsylvania and Texas came up with fracking. And the wealth of fracking has revolutionized the United States' competitive situation and its balance sheet. And the United States is not only on the rebound, it is crushing China. So you should blame all of the troubles China has on the United States. How's that for a way to look at the world?
That's quite an amazing worldview. But we've had this discussion so many times about fracking and our position really making a big shift worldwide because of our energy exports and so on, which we're starting to really ramp up and increase. I want to switch gears, though, and go into New California and the situation that's at hand for California. California's looks like it's going to start entering into a state recession, and certainly probably is already. Your thoughts on that right now?
Well, my belief is that we will have a small national recession starting in about March. I mean, I follow complicated sort of money issues that shows me that the money supply is starting to shrink. And when that happens, it normally is a tip-off that, the number of transactions out there, you've reached sort of a point where there's too much bubbling in the economy, too much leverage, and you start to go down. The United States is going to have a small recession. I believe that the rest of the world has already started their recession. And China, of course, was the big winner. So California was the big winner. California, you could sort of throw away 49 states, and they did just fine, right? With China?
Right.
If China goes down, California, as this export platform, selling whether it's iPhones or anything else, they're in deep doo-doo. And that's the problem for California. The change is here, and California is sort of betting on the hard ways that China will continue to win.
Mm-hmm. And China's
done. Vegas loves you to bet on the hard ways because you eventually lose all your money.
Right. And, of course, right now, with the tax revenues that come in from all the capital gains of all the high-tech industry that depends upon China, that's really at risk right now, isn't it?
Well, that's right. And, you know, what I like to watch is really, really smart people. The company you should have owned and nobody talked about was Microsoft. Microsoft had the highest percentage gain of any of the tech companies because nobody was watching it. Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, changed the company dramatically, made it incredibly profitable, you know, with revenues rising 17.5% compounded, you know, numbers that are spectacular for really, really big companies. And most people didn't pay attention to it except for smart investors. He sold stock in the last 2 weeks. He sold a third of all of his holdings in the last 2 weeks. So if the smartest guy in technology is selling, why are you still holding?
And his reason for selling.
Pardon?
His reason for selling.
He didn't give a reason for selling, but last I checked, the stock was up 330%.
Okay, so, but as far as he's, you know, as far as, did he have a reason to foresee California collapsing, or did he?
No, I'm sure his story was, 300%. Oh, well, you know, I need to diversify my assets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, that's a good way to say, I've creamed this sucker, I'm going to take my benefit. So he is selling at the top, right, as the stock top tipped. Remember, he needs 3 months of good performance before the bad performance starts in order to say he didn't sell on inside information. So I think if you're the CEO of Microsoft, you've got a pretty darn good idea where the economy is going to. And if you're selling, that should be a really good idea that others who own technology stocks should be lightening up.
Yeah, well, and of course, that's going to have the direct impact that you're talking about.
On California. California is the winner in that technology game. I mean, I understand Microsoft's headquarters are in Seattle, but they have huge operations in California. Mm-hmm, and this mm-hmm. is the big money place for them.
So the progression moving on to March, what are we going to be seeing in the California economy? California government and receipts, tax receipts, because I think this is perhaps the most important thing. And you're a former tax person, tax collector for Orange County, California, treasurer for Orange County. The tax revenue coming into the state of California, what is that going to start looking like here 1 month out, 2 months, 3 months in front of March, let's say January?
Well, remember that Facebook stock here 2 weeks ago lost about 25% of its value in 1 day. You know, that means that stock's not going to be a source of capital gains anymore. That's the second largest capital gains vehicle in Silicon Valley. Apple continued to do well. But if you have three or four Facebook disasters out there, these capital gains are going to disappear. That's $18 billion in a state where total payroll is $10 billion. So you're going to lose 180% of payroll if this thing turns down. Who's smart enough to restructure California to handle those kind of numbers? Nobody.
Nobody, yeah. And, you know, you've often talked about that in the treasurer and treasury and all that stuff for California. I mean, so we're talking here moving forward an opportunity, economic downfall, downturn, that's really going to start to really progress around maybe December.
Well, you get in trouble when you talk about stock market numbers, but I'm right. Telling everybody to sell. I think that you'll actually have, you know, a push. There's going to be this big deal the Chinese are going to cut as you get closer to the midterm elections. You know, Peter Svort got indicted or got fired yesterday, soon to be indicted. So all of this news is playing to Trump. And all of this is looking really, really good, and it always looks good at the top, right, Paul?
Oh yeah, it always
says.
And
so smart money is already selling, and dumb money is still buying. So I think if the stock market tops, You can bet 6 months after the stock market tops in the U.S., California is going to start to have the crisis. It will be shockingly quick here because it's called cash. And then tax collections are in April. My bet by April, California is starting to get into the crisis.
Which really is an advancement of your calendar, I think, because you were talking maybe later on in 2019, but yourself and others were starting to hear sooner than that, which is April, March, April.
No, Paul. First you have the money problem, then you have the debt problem.
Right, that kicks in.
The money problem will start in March and April,
right.
And the debt problem will come out of nowhere as a crisis in mid-2019.
Okay, now here's that's the right timing. Here's the kingpin to all this is that you have made the statement in the past that California's debt and budget crisis is really just sort of a hair trigger operation at this point.
Well, it's built on fraud. It's built on this globalization, 20-year globalization structure that has been just wonderful for California and pretty much terrible for almost every other state. Everybody else lost jobs. California got jobs. California, interestingly enough, lost its middle class because they moved away because they couldn't afford it, and they replaced it with a welfare class. California's 31% of TANF, that's welfare payments, and 34% of Obamacare payments. So, Nancy Pelosi really brought home the bacon. But, that's not really an economy when you live off transfer payments unless you have the capital gains to, continue the game. And there's a big talk right now in Congress of distributing Medicaid funds per capita instead of who has the most poor people. That would just crucify California. Those poor folk would move out.
Well, and of course, California has no middle class now. It's just amazing the stories we're hearing about the homeless and everything else. And I know down there in Orange County, there's a big problem with it as well.
These are white former middle class people and families. It's
right.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Amazing that, and you use the term white, which is true. most of the people that are displaced and homeless are white, but when you take a look at across the entire spectrum of the homeless, it's California citizens that are displaced of all varieties, and they're homeless, and of course everybody who's an illegal foreign national has all the government jobs because they've been given that priority. Kind of an interesting switch of circumstances. We're going to switch gears here, Chris, because I wanted to talk also about Jeff Sessions and what's been going on with Peter Strzok. Because you were one of the people to announce this yesterday, that he actually was fired from the FBI. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the timing, Jeff Sessions, this is a guy who was crucified by the Democrats 20 years ago when he was being was nominated to be a federal judge as some kind of racist. People that know Jeff Sessions know he's a Southern gentleman. You may not like his pace, but he gets the job done. In what he's by taking over as the Attorney General of the United States and not rushing to judgment on all these issues like Peter Fork and the rest of them, he has managed to sort of pace this out that all of it is coming to a crescendo at the midterm election. So you haven't had the Inspector General's report out and all the detail coming out, but the deep state is about to get crucified. It's going to be their day in hell.
Yeah, their day in hell. So the lady who has gained a lot of weight and drinks a lot of Chardonnay these days, substantial amount of Chardonnay, you can see it in her face, she's probably not feeling too well right now about Mr. Sessions.
Well, I'm not going to go there, Paul, but what I will say is that the Clinton Foundation, nobody really wants to prosecute politicians for the stupid stuff they do and the games they play. That isn't very big in the public. Public thinks they're all crooked. But what the public does care about is charities that have 93% of their $2 billion going out in overhead. That's a pretty easy one. Crooked leaders of charities ought to go in the can. And I think that both Clintons are at serious risk of doing jail time.
Now, you know, one of the things, too, and again, you're kind of familiar with this neck of the woods down there, but the Clintons have always had, with their Clinton Foundation, connections to Haiti.
And, well, that's right. Haiti is the gift that keeps on giving, you know, if you're a government spender, because it used to be a forested island. It was completely logged. So it's basically a barren island now that has national disasters constantly because there's no trees to protect it when hurricanes come through. And it's got lots and lots of people who basically operate as a welfare den. So I feel it's a very sad place. But it's a great place to continue to pour money in for charities, and the Clintons have been front and center in that. That money disappears conveniently.
Well, you know, it also plays into something else, and this is part of the New California angle. Looking ahead, maybe a year from now, when New California is starting to ripen and mature, and we get past the California legislature, but what about Puerto Rico as an option for another state?
Well, Paul, I if you're interested in the New California, you should be in fourth or fifth gear right now, running strong, because all of these forces, what I call the meteor headed for California, are in place. And I believe that you have two big problems out there. You have Puerto Rico, which really needs to be a state, or it's going to cost the federal treasury somewhere around $130 billion a year to subsidize it forever. And then you're going to have California, which is going to cost somewhere around $500 billion to bail out. And there's nobody in the rest of the United States willing to bail that out. So I think what you're going to do is you're going to have two new states. One, of course, will be Republican. One, of course, will be Democrat. And that's going to be New California, and that's going to be Puerto Rico. So I see this as a great opportunity for New California being willing to be a manufacturing hub, to be an energy and water hub, to basically go back to what made California great all the way up until the 70s. And you should be willing to buy yourself out of old California. It's going to take about an $80 to $100 billion check. Now, that sounds like why would I pay the old California off? Well, I mean, they built the roads and they did stuff like that. And that's the cost of doing business to go free. If you could create a new California, you'd create the greatest economic engine, the greatest energy boom on the planet. I think that'd be a pretty good deal.
Oh, I do too. And, you know, I see this whole thing unfolding now more and more and more as the days kind of wind down here. One of the things that's going to play big into this is what's going to be happening in California's House of Representatives, the 53 seats that are available there. Right now, Californians have 14 of those are Republican, 39 are Democrat. Do you see the California Republicans picking up more seats in the House of Representatives this election?
Well, it's funny you say that because, originally it was that they were going to lose 8 of the 14.
Right.
You know, that's pretty much is gone. And people now are actually talking about the Democrats could lose 2 or 3. You know, people vote when they care. Most people haven't cared in California. You know, if they cared, they moved out. But I think that when you see President Trump, the biggest change in data for support for Trump is those 18 to 28-year-old white males who went 64% Clinton, 36% Trump. That has switched, and they're now 64% Trump. Hispanics, which were deeply for Hillary Clinton, are moving towards Trump. This is real change. You know, the poor people, when they get jobs and they make $20 an hour, it's revolutionary for them. I think that's what Donald Trump is offering, and I think that poor people are understanding that the government cheese isn't as good as a good job. I think they've always believed that. They just hadn't had access to those kind of jobs. Yeah, that's changing.
Yeah, I see the same thing. I'm looking at a long list of candidates that are vying out there. I see California perhaps even picking up as many as 6 members of the House of Representatives, which will be wonderful. But, you know, of course, the California state government is not going to change. I don't see any kind of remote ability for the state government to change to where it's going to become a Republican government again. People liking John Cox over Gavin Newsom, Chris?
I just don't think Cox has been, you know, has done a very good job of getting his message out. But you never know. I mean, nobody's going to be voting in this election for, you know, John Cox or Gavin Newsom. They're going to vote for the Democrats, or they're going to vote against the Democrats. That's the bottom line.
You know, according to my sources, and of course, you know, I work every day with these politicos relative to vis-a-vis New California. And of course, New California is not a political entity. But, you know, we're deeply impacted by the races and so on. We're sitting in the catbird seat because we can see all the action going around us. It's quite amazing. It's like sitting in a shark tank, you know. But the movement of John Cox, I just hear resoundingly, Chris, that he doesn't go out and he doesn't campaign. He doesn't communicate. He's doing nothing even to remotely try to become a successful candidate.
Like I said, but it's you're either for the Democrats or you're against it.
Right.
Gavin Newsom is a very, you know, attractive fellow who, when he talks, you find out he's a box of rocks.
That's right. No, that's, you know, he
should,
exactly
he
right.
He should never talk.
No,
he's a guy that should smile in his, you know, and in his enhanced set of teeth. He should just smile. He's got a nice looking wife. He looks great. He should just smile and keep his mouth shut.
I got to tell you that your assessment of him, because I've had the opportunity to speak to the box of rocks.
You know, good one, Paul. I'm going to say speak to a box of rocks.
Hello. But I'm not.
That's
too,
why I love being on this show.
But
wow, that's fun.
I have this visual, though, because I've never spoken to John Cox, even though they wanted me to have him on my show. And I said no, but when I was contacted, but I see both of them as a box of rocks. I really do. I don't see either one as, you know, and like you said, that's really what it's going to come down to. Either you're for or against Republican or Democrat, or that's how you're going to vote. But I don't see John Cox producing any kind of energy, nor really Gavin Newsom. So that whole thing is kind of moot. I think the big thing that might happen is Javier Becerra might, in fact, be, you know, there might be some sort of lawsuit coming against him to throw him out of office currently because he was not hooked up again with the bar. He never reactivated his license, or he wasn't an active attorney 5 years before taking office. What are your thoughts on that? Quickly, we've got about 30 seconds.
Well, I think that's called a bang-drop loss for him. Will anybody do anything about it? I don't know. But clearly he violated the rules, and he knew he violated the rules, and everybody else knows he violated the rules. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But Paul, I want to congratulate you on becoming chairman of the New California effort. Anybody doesn't go to this, you know, the meeting convention in Irvine is foolish. This is going to happen. The meteor is about to hit Sacramento, and there will be a New California.
Yeah. Well, listen, Chris, and it'll be a New California with a lot of help by you and other supporting cast of characters. There's no question about it. We really do appreciate everything that you've done to move the ball forward, not only for New California, but California and the nation in general, too. So anyway, tell us how we can get a hold of you.
I'm on Breitbart, California every morning. I'm usually in Breitbart, Big Government, and the rest of them. I do 1 to 3 articles, and I'll be in Irvine.
Yep.
Paul, tell them how to get to Irvine and get to a New California.
That's right, newcaliforniastate.com. That's the best way to get a hold of us. Okay, Chris, thank you very much for being with us on Agenda 21 Radio. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that, you know, we just blew through 3 commercial blocks there. But, you know, I think the content, of course, was very, very good there with Chris Street. He's always an excellent interview. So thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, agenda21radio.news, and also newcaliforniastate.com. And click on the old icon to come down to us at the convention in Irvine, California. Anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember, stay strong, America. Stay strong. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.